Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to Three Women, Three Ways. I'm proud to say that the Three Divas LLC presents this radio show for your listening, entertainment, and engagement. My name is Deborah Adams, and I am excited to be here with you today. Normally, you know, we have three of us sitting at the table. And today, my two diva sisters have other engagements and cannot be with us. And, you know, that's okay. I think it's important that you know that the three divas are busy. We have lives and we have other engagements and responsibilities, and that's the perfect reason for the three of us to be in this partnership. Now, we'd like to talk to you about topics of current and political value, and we change our topic every week. And we start by introducing ourselves. So my name is Deborah Adams, and I am a woman who lives in Southwest Washington, and my tagline is, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. And the it I'm talking about is domestic violence, violence against women, and that sort of life experience. And I have spent the last 20 years of my life gaining knowledge and increasing my skills and completing my education to have a better understanding of why we have this phenomenon called violence against women. So, our topic today is going to be changing as we mature or grow older. And I wanted to first say that if you would like to join our conversation, you may call in. Our call-in number is 646-378-0430. We also have a chat room, so if you have come to our radio talk show via our show page, if you scroll down to the bottom, you will have the ability to join our conversation via our chat line. Of course, you can add your comments or your experience or ask questions in an anonymous format. There's absolutely no need for you to identify yourself should you choose not to. So, if you're ready to dig in our current topic today, then let's do that. I would like to tell you that I took a course at my college, and the name of the course was Women and Aging. And you might think, why is that such an important topic? Well, I think there's many reasons why it's good to talk about something that you feel fear around or some anxiety about. And lots of times we as human beings do just that. We don't want to age. We don't want to get older. We don't want to lose our youth and our youthful good looks and our attitudes and acceptance. So I found out through the study in this course that there are a lot of positives for us as we age, and that's really affirming and also helps me reframe my ideas about aging. And I think there's plenty of room for us who live in the United States and the global world that we do to reframe our views of aging. And so let's just start off with an article that I found published by Psychology Today. And it is, the title is, Could Aging Be Good for Women? And it starts off, it says, you know, normally, according to popular culture, we are all terrified of growing old and that we fight it with every fiber of our being, spending billions of dollars on various anti-aging products. And there's another thing that I know particularly women face, and I'm not saying that men don't face it too, but I know for sure from personal experience, it's something called empty nest syndrome. Okay, well, guess what? The good news is here. This does not have to be you. It does not have to be me. There are research studies that find that women's body images actually become more positive as they move from 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 and 60 and 70. And that's kind of surprising, right? I don't think many of us would think that would be true. But Susan Nolan Hoeksema, who wrote the article, says her study led her to believe otherwise. And she says that from her studies, the results and outcomes of her study show that women's lives get better as they grow older, and it's because of their psychological strength. So what does that mean? Yeah? What is a psychological strength? And she says that women can use mental strengths to tackle new problems, and that we are good at navigating the healthcare system or living on less income. We also draw upon identity strengths to manage the many changes that come our way. And we have really good relational strengths, which means we make relationships and we tend to have long-lasting relationships. And we can use those relationships to encourage, to ask for help if we need it, but also to find someone to listen to share the experience with. And I think that's an important thing. So there is a social or cultural norm that says men don't talk about, you know, emotional things, or that men don't relate or count on their relationships to the same level that women do. So we can reframe, and I think that's a really important way for us to look at it, because I want to be happier in my old age, don't you? I don't want to be fearful. I don't want to be fretting about how I look or what other people are thinking of me. But the only way that's going to change is if we work on some of those social and cultural norms. You know, our esteemed author of this article says that aging is not just about surviving, but it's about flourishing. And there was an interesting study done. Abigail Stewart, a psychologist at the University of Michigan, she studied women who graduated from high school or college in the 50s or 60s. She found that as they grew older, her subjects were more certain of their identity, you know, such as knowing who they are and being their own person, felt more productive and generative, like I have a new level of productivity or effectiveness, and also that I have influence on my community, and were much more confident in their power, their own self-power. So these women talked about having to come into their own, reaching the level of maturity and confidence and competence that was not only satisfying but exhilarating. And I can certainly agree with that. Has anybody who is listening right now had the experience of coming into your own, feeling like you've reached the spot in your development as a human being where you are more secure, more comfortable, more happy, more in charge of how you live? I think, you know, it's something to ponder and think about. Now, excuse me. Also in my research, I found a fascinating little quiz that is called it's the Get Smart Challenge, and it says test your aging knowledge. And there are 10 questions. And I got 7 out of 10, and I think it's because I took the courses that I did in my college career. The first question is, progressive loss of bone that accompanies aging is called what? You have 3 choices: rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, or osteoporosis. And actually, there has been quite a bit of research and talk on all the health shows lately about osteoporosis. And that's where we lose our bone, our bone tissue. And so that's the correct answer. If you said osteoporosis, you would be right. Okay. The second question is, which of the following is not a contributing factor to bone loss? So what does not cause bone loss? Is exercise, menopause, or smoking? If you said exercise, you're 100% right, because exercise will actually deter bone loss and help build that tissue back up. So exercise at all age, and of course what we're hearing is that exercise doesn't have to be at the level of an Olympic runner. It can be walking, and it can be some simple aerobic, non-threatening types of forms of exercise that will help eliminate the possibility of bone loss. The next question is, which is a major contributor to wrinkles? Now, I don't know how you feel about wrinkles, and I don't know if I think this is the only reason, but certainly I've been hearing lately on all of our Good Morning talk shows about the dangers of sun exposure. And not only that, I have friends and family and relatives who have had some experiences of skin cancer related to sun exposure. I don't know about you, but when I was in my teens, I used to be what I would call a sun worshiper, and I would almost literally bake myself in the sun. We used baby oil with iodine in it. I'm not sure where that wisdom came from, but that's what we did. So if you chose sun exposure as the major contributor to wrinkles, you are right on the button. And so even though I still remain a sun worshiper, I do use lotion with sunscreen in it. I have looked and grown and accepted that I can be out in the sun without, burning my skin. The next question is about a vitamin that can lead to deficiency or can lead to aging skin. So which vitamin do we need the most that can help us prevent our aging skin? There's vitamin A, vitamin B12, and vitamin D. So, based on our last conversation, I would say that vitamin D is the correct answer, because if we aging skin has limited capacity to make vitamin D production, and so that can also lead to aging skin. Okay, we're halfway through there. Okay, the next question. Okay, this has to do with our eyes. How many of you out here in the world are experiencing increased need for eyeglasses? Yeah, sometimes that happens with age. The question presented to us is, excessive pressure inside the eyeball produces which of these three? Presbyopia, glaucoma, or cataracts? And it's excessive pressure inside the eyeball. And if you chose glaucoma, you are correct. And what happens there is the lens starts to accumulate yellow substances, which can is the product of the excessive pressure inside the eyeball, and it just makes it difficult to see. It changes your focus and may require some additional attention from your optometrist. Another question I would like to know, if you have any ideas about this, is why do older people have a decreased sense of taste? Is it because their taste receptors break down? Is it because the tongue loses elasticity? Or is it because the sense of smell weakens? Now, there's some pretty, I might think that all three of those, but the number one reason why people who age have a decreased sense of taste is because of the sense of smell weakening. There's such a huge correlation and relationship between our sense of smell and our sense of taste. They work together. And so once we start losing our sense of smell, food becomes less attractive to us, and we have less interest in eating food. So that's the correct answer for that one. Okay, we're on question 7. Have you heard of the use it or lose it theory? And what is it? Is it a theory for how people age? Is it a theory for how people lose weight? Or is it a theory for the onset of dementia? It is actually a theory on how people age. So the use it and lose it theory of aging suggests that use and overuse of your organs pushes them to the brink of destruction. So a poor diet, too much alcohol, cigarette smoking are thought to accelerate natural wear and tear on our vital organs. So the point here being that if you lessen those, if you have a good diet, or if you drink less, or if you smoke less, or stop altogether, you can inhibit some of the aging process. And that's a reasonable thought, is what I'm thinking. So question 8 is, how many inches might people lose in height by the age of 80? Are you aware of that? Have you seen that happen with your loved ones, your parents, your grandparents? The choices are 1 inch, 2 inch, or 3 inch. And if you chose 2 inches, you would be correct. People are their tallest by their late 40s, and then gradually lose up to 2 inches in height by the age of 80. Now, I don't know about you, but I think there are some other physical characteristics that we notice too, but it certainly is the shortening of our bones due to bone loss and posture and all those sorts of things that our height decreases. Hey, you know what? I'm already short enough. I'm only 5'2". I don't need to shrink Oh, gosh. I'm going to do what I can to prevent that. The next question is, pain and stiffness in the joints are referred to as, and your three choices are, osteoporosis, shin splints, and arthritis. If you chose arthritis, that is the correct answer. And what happens is your aging causes cartilage to lose water, so it makes us more vulnerable to injury and often leads to arthritis. And many of our elders, including people in midlife and up, are prone to arthritis and have that as a serious complication. And hang on, we are down to question number 10, testing your knowledge of aging. What can you do to reduce the natural decline of kidneys that occurs with age? So you have three choices: lift weights, drink plenty of fluids, and eat sugary foods. Of those three, if you select drink plenty of fluids, that is the correct answer. And I think that as we age, we tend to stop drinking fluids, and that is definitely not healthy. If by increasing our fluids, it helps control the blood pressure, and it also helps keep the blood glucose levels in check, which helps preserve the kidney function. So, wow. Congratulations, you just finished a quiz on testing your aging knowledge. And of course, you know, doing it a second time, we get 100%, right? And who doesn't enjoy that, having 100% score on a quiz? Now, that always makes me feel good. So, how do you feel about aging? And why do we feel that way about aging? And is it all external factors that make us feel this way? Or are there some internal factors? And I mentioned that I did take a course on women and aging. And I, one of my textbooks was a great book written by Margaret Morgan Ross Gillette. And she is actually known as an expert on women and aging. And her book is called Declining to Decline, Cultural Combat and the Politics of Midlife. And there really is a lot of politics around middle age. I've never really mentioned my age to you all, but I think I have mentioned that I've been in my anti-violence work for 20 years and that I have 8 grandchildren, so you might imagine what my age might be. And the truth of it is I have never, ever identified as middle-aged. Have you? That's an interesting question for me, because I always thought middle-aged applied to everybody around me. And I am now at an age where I'm, you know, on a countdown to where what is considered retirement age. So I'm beginning to think, when am I ever going to reach middle age? What is middle age? And the truth of it is, our average lifespan these days is, you know, 70 and 80. So if you're looking for a midlife marker, we're talking 35, 40, 45, and I, you know, I have to say I'm past those ages. So I'm like, when am I going to hit midlife? And it looks like I hit it and moved on past it without it affecting me in a negative way. So for that, I'm grateful. Who needs negativity? I certainly don't. I work very hard at remaining positive, and it is work. It is a lot of work to remain positive. Back to my author friend, Margaret Morgan Ross Gillette. One of her thoughts in her books is that there is a heroine. You know, we have these archetypes that have developed. And in our popular culture, in our books, and in our movies and our television shows and our radio shows, there are archetypes that kind of develop. And one of the ways that we can help combat aging is to work on redefining heroism at midlife to include self-rescue. And that is an interesting thought by itself. What I get from Margaret Gillette's words there is that I have the ability to redefine myself, and I can do that on my own through self-rescue strategies. And that feels so very empowering to me. And it actually makes me feel more powerful, even more powerful than I did when I was in my 20s and giving birth to my 4 children. Now, that is an extremely powerful point in any human being's life when you are going through the act of reproducing another human being. That is an experience that is both spiritual and physical and mindful, and when you are able to see another human being, you know, come from your physical being, that is a miraculous and wonderful moment, and that is a very, very powerful feeling. It is indeed one of the most powerful moments I've ever experienced. And the fact that I had any part in that process of recreating human life. And so I think to, you know, look for ways to recreate that as I age. Find ways to acknowledge my own self-power and my own ability to think and reason and use my critical judgment and talk down my inner critic and listen to my intuition, which is what we talked about last week, to achieve the state of self-rescue. And often in our society, in Western society, I should say, there's this thought that people grow old and they need taking care of. They cannot function on their own. They cannot do what they need to do. And we need to change that landscape, and we need to make it possible for our elders to be on their own as long as they want to be, and to care for themselves in a way that they choose to care for themselves. So that will take some actual change, right? Now, you may know this about me, that I am a feminist. I do not hesitate to identify as a feminist. And I didn't always identify as a feminist, but here is a quote from Margaret Gillette's book that I think applies. And she says, "I suspect that the average woman in her middle years has evolved. She is at least an applied feminist." By which I mean that if she doesn't call herself a feminist, she has still been influenced and changed by progressive ideas and ideals. In the same way, she is becoming an applied anti-ageist, which is a life course progression. So, you know, there's lots of ways to define feminist, but mostly the most important means for me to identify being feminist is equity and equality for everybody. And with that comes a sense of autonomy and knowing who I am. So I find that interesting that she finds that could actually be part of the aging process. And you know what? I don't disagree with that based on personal experience. And the personal experience for me was that I was a young woman in the 70s, in the late 60s, in the 70s, a teenager and a young woman. And I did not get involved in the liberation movement or the anti-war movement. I wasn't involved in the civil rights movements that were all these social change movements that were occurring at that time. And it isn't until my children were reaching the age of what the previous article mentioned, the empty nest syndrome, that I started feeling really passionate about feminism and a feminist theory. So I can certainly see that certainly resonates with me. How about you? If you would like to join the conversation, please do so. Please call in. The number is 646-378-0430. And you can check in on our chat room, too. Make a comment, and I will acknowledge you and bring you into the conversation that way. So another thought on changing as we age is talking with a younger person who felt like they had a handle on aging and had a positive attitude and was not buying into the stereotypes and the attitudes towards aging, which is you age, you become less useful to society. She felt that her upbringing from her parents, she received support in building and leaning on her own sense of autonomy and secure connection. So, you know, if we want to change how society looks at aging
individuals, that is something we can work on improving in the upbringing stages, is making sure that our children have their own autonomy and feel secure connections throughout their childhood. And that doesn't seem like too much to do, but it really is. It really is, because our children observe us and then learn from us. And it doesn't almost matter what we say so much as what we do. So if my children see me as aging gracefully and with energy and vitality and excitement, then that may be a cue for them to look at their aging life process in the same manner. And I do have to say, I love it when my children are being concerned and caring for me. And particularly my beautiful youngest son said to me a couple of times, is, "Mom, you work too hard for your age, or you shouldn't do that because of your age." And it just gives me a chuckle, because I know as he gets closer to the age I am, he's going to feel differently. And I can certainly appreciate that he has the love and care for me to bring it up to me. So we're both learning, right? And that's what it's about, is that we're always learning. We're always, always, always learning. And I just think there's no other way. You can get set in your ways, and you can get static, and you can get uncomfortable, and you can get, you know, in a frame, in a mind point where this is it, that's all there is, and I'm not worth it, and I don't have anything to live for. But I certainly don't feel that way myself, and I would certainly hope that you, as our listeners, would be able to attain that sense of autonomy and connection for yourself. So I wrote, part of my assignment, of course, when you're going to graduate school is writing. And I learned to like writing. I didn't think I would, but I do. And one of our assignments was to write about ourselves and our aging process. And I wrote an essay that I'm actually very proud of, that I really enjoy. And let me see if I can pull that up on my computer here. I've actually done quite a bit of writing on a personal level and that sort of thing. And I find that very affirming. The title of my essay is Me as Story. And I wrote that as a requirement for my course. And I started off, I read Me as Story. The real story is bits and pieces of me. My life is framed by my experiences and education. My perspective is formed by a view of me as my family, friends, and community help me formulate my world, cultural, and universal truth. I am a work in progress, an ongoing project with ever-changing media and data, ever-shaping boundaries and definitions, never the same and never-ending. My story is the essence of who I am at this moment in time. I am more than physical matter or static. I am multiple and self-assigned identities interwoven in a quilt of context where the woof thread is my positionality and the weft weaves my identity. This story is my becoming, a narrative of acceptable change as I develop and age into a whole being. So that's the point for me, is that aging is part of us. It is natural, and it is quote-unquote normal, and it's part of us developing into a whole human being. And, you know, you have to think of yourself as an individual over this time, and see how you've changed, right? And every one of us changes. as I was aging, I became well aware of some of the discrimination that is out there. And I felt that discrimination both as a woman and both as a midlifer. And so fortunately for me, the career path I was on in the last 20 years, ageism was not practiced openly, and so I didn't have to worry about aging. And I must remind you, it is at my middle age phase in my life that I did return to college, and I completed my bachelor's and my master's degree. So right there, I'm breaking some traditional stereotypes about a woman in my age bracket. But it's also hard to find work. And there's a sense of competing, right, when you look at it. What does that person have that I don't have? What do I have that that person doesn't have? What is it that makes me the best candidate for this work or this position? And so competition can be healthy as long as it doesn't dominate your own personal narrative. I definitely knew that midlife was a transitional stage for me because, as I said, I was embarking on a new career and I returned to college. Those are huge transitions, right? And the career that I had chosen on was nothing I had ever thought I would be doing at the age of 18. Nowhere close, nowhere near, never even crossed my mind as a possibility. So there's some value in being in a transitional phase of your life where you can see where you've been and how can I use that to where I want to go now. So I think it's really important for us to keep that in mind and to focus on aging the best way that we can. You know, it's about now that I'm really missing my other diva sisters because we always have a really vibrant and engaging conversation. And so I'm missing them right now. If you would like to call in, the number is 646-378-0430. And also remember, you can contact me on the chat line. Be happy to engage in a dialogue with you about aging because it is something we can't put, you know, sweep behind the closet door and forget about because it's going to happen whether we acknowledge it or not. And changing is a powerful concept, and many of us don't like change. We don't like it in our work areas. We don't like it in our personal areas. And we don't like it in any way, shape, or form. And something I have been working on as an individual is how to accept change and embrace change and use it to propel me forward. So, you know, generally speaking, we think of January as a month where we're setting resolutions, and we talked about those last week. You know, it's kind of a sense of renewal. Every year we get a chance to renew. And often in the dark nights, when our nights are the longest, we have time for reflection over the past. And as we reflect over the past, it gives us motivation to think about the future. And so with this January, use this as a month to seek epiphanies, right? Look for those special moments that occur in our everyday existence and, you know, stay present. It's important to stay present and experience the day. Have you felt as if the world is passing you by, either age-wise or work-wise, or your children are growing or whatever? You know, that like you're in the same place and everything else is flying past you. And one of the ways to feel like you can gain a handle on that, I think, is to to be more present in the day. There's a bunch of people that have talked about that, you know, if you keep looking past, you're never going to move. And if you think too much about the future, you're going to feel stuck as well. So when you really focus on the present and look at what you're doing day by day and count each action as an important step in your life transition, that it can kind of, you will receive a sense of time slowing down. And that's important because I like to think that I enjoy the small moments. I was able to spend some time with two of my granddaughters this past week, and one of them says to me, she says, "Grandma, my friends asked me, we were talking, and my friend said, 'Boy, you sure spend a lot of time with your grandma.' And I said, 'Oh, and how do you feel about that? Is that a good thing?' And she said, 'Yeah, I think it's a good thing.'" So, you know, being with them and seeing life through their eyes certainly is a valuable exercise for me because I can see where they're going and what they're doing and use that as motivation. And I find that to be very true, that my grandchildren were the most extreme motivating factor in what I am doing as an adult in my career right now. Certainly, I do not want my grandchildren to experience violence, specifically in the context of a marriage or an intimate relationship. So that's very motivating for me to work on these subjects and to also to role model for them that life doesn't stop. You know, you can have a certain number applied to you age-wise, but there's always things to look forward to, and there's always things to be part of and to enjoy. And that usually relates to spending time with the people you care about, whether it's a friend or family or a coworker or someone you're studying with. So, you know, let's use our relational skills. Let's use our ability to look at things in a different way. Let's use those psychological strengths. Let's use them, and let's have them lead us to a happier old age, but we'll and live a long and a healthy life. And that is possible. It is attainable. I would like to thank you for listening in today. Three Ways is always excited to have a conversation. We love to talk. We love to chat. And we share our differences and learn that we can have those differences while still remaining good friends and kind to each other. And that is something definitely to think about this Saturday morning, or whatever day you're listening to our radio show. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next Saturday. We are on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for now, we are Three Women, Three Ways, and we're signing out. Thank you.